My guest is Jill Stallnaker. She started the Leaning Tree Agency. We're going to hear all about that and what it does. She's also a representative of the Tennessee Voices. Jill has a big to do with mental health in our country and all the crisis that's going on. She's done a lot of great things when we talk about the Leaning Tree Agency and the Tennessee Voices. We're going to hear her life story, too. It's amazing. So sit back and listen as we interview Jill. Thanks for being on the show today, Jill.
Thank you, Randy, for having me.
So I've known you for a long time, and you got a lot of qualities. One of them has been writing. I think that's where I may have met you the first time, and you've wrote articles for the newspapers and different things. But you've got your own agency, the Leaning Tree Agency, that is dealing with something that's very important to us in our country today. And one of those is the mental health crisis that's going on. But before we get into that, I want to talk about you and your life and how we got to here. What was growing up like? Where'd you grow up at?
I pretty much grew up here. I was born in North Carolina. I think when I was about 3, we moved to Toledo, Ohio for my dad to go to law school at around age 40, which is how old I am now.
Wow.
And then we moved to Brussels, Belgium for a year.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he got his international law degree there. So one law degree in Toledo, international law degree in Brussels, Belgium. And then we moved to Michigan. And then when I was 9, we moved to Cookeville. And so I consider myself
You've been here most of your life. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was great growing up. I've got 2 siblings and a half brother. I don't know. I feel like I had a really good, happy childhood. My parents are very creative. Our family is like oozing with creativity in every way.
Well, that shows in you too.
Yeah.
It runs in the family.
It really does. All of us are very creative and visionaries. And so I always felt really free to think critically, to, you know, be expressive. We were given a lot of opportunity to just be kids. You know, I spent time anyway, a lot of time in the woods and in the barn with the animals. And I homeschooled from 7th grade through graduation.
Yeah.
And I really think that that was a big part of, you know, shaping me. I was the only one that homeschooled that long in my family. I needed it because I'm a dreamer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I was raised on a big farm and we were the same way. We were outside all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think our parents knew where we were half the time, but we knew where to not be and when to come home.
Always take a dog in the woods. If you go in the woods, take a dog. Yep.
But a lot of the kids today don't have that, do they?
You know, they don't. I'm actually living right now on the farm that I grew up on, and it is tough because I have to encourage some of my kids. Some of them are naturally drawn to the outdoors.
Yeah.
But I kind of have to be like, go outside, right? Because we didn't have the cell phones when we were kids. And so, yeah, it's a different world.
It is. It's changed.
Yeah.
I think about my granddaughter. She's 8. I would not want her out roaming and out by herself and stuff like we were back then.
Yeah.
I don't know what's changed. Protective grandpa, I guess. Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. You have, and I do not know how you do this, you have 5 children.
Yes.
Wow. Ages, what, 19, 17, 15, 12, and 10.
Yes.
That is amazing. Christmases had to be a fun time, weren't they?
Christmases are fun. They have always been fun. I love it. I always have wanted a big family. I'm a people person. And I think in every aspect of my life, I'm like, surround me with people. And I was a stay-at-home mom. I homeschooled my kids for, 10 years, was married for 15 years. It really shaped me. I mean, it has hugely shaped who I am today. And I'm very proud of it and proud of my kids and the way they're turning out. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. Let's get into the music aspect.
Okay.
You grew up playing the piano, right?
I did.
So I did too. Did you enjoy it? Did you take lessons?
Yes. I think I was the only, because we all took lessons.
Yeah.
And I was the only one that they didn't have to say, practice.
You got to go practice.
Yeah. Like, in fact, when I was probably 11 and 12, like really starting to, become my own person and realize like I really like this, I would wake up before anybody else and go play the piano. Yeah. And so if anything, they were like, don't play so early.
Waking up the household by playing the piano.
Yes.
That's great. I didn't enjoy it when I was taking. I was in probably 3rd grade, 4th grade, 5th grade in there. I didn't really enjoy it because the piano teacher wouldn't let me play the songs I wanted to.
Mm.
He had to play the old short
Mozart,
piano.
Yeah. Beethoven.
And I said, no, I don't want to play that. But then after I got older and got back into it, I found a teacher that would let me play the rock and roll and the gospel and the things I wanted to play. And it made a huge difference in making you be interested and want to do it.
I love that you're saying that, because I had to stick with the classics, and, you know, recitals were like the dread of my life. Oh. I do not like to perform. I hate it so badly. And I mean, I love it so much that I loved it regardless, but I made a conscious decision with my kids not to put them in lessons. We have a keyboard in our house, and I will show them stuff if they want. And sure enough, my three oldest daughters have all taught themselves to play the piano. I've got one learning to play guitar. They're writing music now. Like, I mean, it was kind of a risk.
Amazing.
But yeah, I wanted them to be either into it or not.
Yeah, you want them to be, to want to do it.
Yes.
That's great.
Yep.
Well, so you went from the piano to the guitar. Why?
Well, I can't play the guitar, really, but it's interesting that
you look good doing it anyway, whether you can or not.
Thank you. Thank you. No, so when I was still married, my ex-husband taught me to play the guitar a little bit. We, at the time, we were traveling around the country in an RV for his job, and I was homeschooling the kids, and I missed music. You know, I had had my, I had almost had my last baby, and I was, you know, starting to be like, I want to do something for me.
Yeah.
So we didn't have room, obviously, for a piano. So he got me a guitar, taught me some chords. And then I think because I was so like restricted, I could only play like five chords, and it just was too late to learn a new instrument. But what that did was it forced me to find another way to be creative. And so I started writing lyrics to songs.
Wow.
And that unlocked something in me. And I began to write all the time for years.
Just writing song after song after song.
It just started pouring out of me. And so now I write songs on the piano, but I'm so thankful that I had that barrier, because I realized, oh my gosh, I love words. That's when I started writing words down.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, we're talking with Jill Stalnaker. We're talking about her growing up in the Leaning Tree Agency we're going to talk about, and her forming that, and what it's been able to do with women and all kinds of addiction and mental health issues. So you went from writing music. You actually played at the Bluebird Cafe, right?
I did, yes.
That had to be amazing.
It was so cool. So I had, when we lived in Nashville, we started going to a new church in Brentwood.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of musicians in that area.
Yeah.
And so there was one person at that church who was the former director of Chick Singer Night at the Bluebird Cafe. She became a friend of mine, really an acquaintance. She's a friend now. I discovered there was a music business, and I bravely sent her some of my stuff. And I said, could you just, like, you know, look at this and tell me if it's any good? Yeah. And so she became a mentor and encouraged me and, you know, told me, like, it doesn't suck, basically. It was really affirming. And so she eventually invited me to play at the Bluebird. And keep in mind, I hate performing, but I was
You're
like
scared to get up and perform. Is
to
it
perform?
A,
yeah, I'm not scared to get on a stage, but to perform, yes.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I can't pass this up. I have to do it. And I was very excited. And so I did it, and it was fun. It was good. But that then led to her asking me, hey, do you want to book an artist or two for the next show? And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll try to find somebody. And then eventually she had to move to a different state for her husband's job. And she wrote me and said, hey, I've been doing this for 22, 23 years. What do you think about taking over the director role for the show at the Bluebird?
Yeah.
And so I had helped her book a few shows by then. And I mean, that was...
That's the ultimate,
isn't
it, for anybody that's into music?
Yes. Yeah. I was so excited. And so I've been doing that for, I think, about over 2 years now.
That is great. That is amazing. We got to take a break. We're talking with Jill today about her life and how she created the Leaning Tree Agency and all the many great things it's just been able to do. We're going to get into that in the next segment. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us this week. My guest this week is Jill Stalnaker. She created the Leaning Tree Agency, and we're about to talk to her about that. We've been talking about in the first segment her life and music and how she got into writing music and Bluebird Cafe and some great things there, which kind of led into the Leaning Tree Agency. We're going to talk to Jill about that. So, Jill, Bluebird Cafe, performed, got into where you're directing and bringing the acts on and everything. How did that lead into the Leaning Tree Agency? What made you want to create that?
Yeah, so I think, and I honestly, I can't remember if I started at the Bluebird or Wildwood, actually.
Which one came first?
Right. It was so close to the same time. So I think I had gone to a couple Bluebird shows, so maybe been a part of it, kind of discovered there was a music business. I mean, I just never thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge industry. My sister-in-law had told me once, she said, there is kind of a bluebird type show out at Wildwood Resort. And this was before the renovation and all that. John and Natasha Dean just purchased it. And they were like, there's hit songwriters that write for like Martina McBride and Tim McGraw. And I'm thinking, at Wildwood in Granville, you know, like, no. But I thought, I'll go check it out. And I did. And sure enough, Jeff Cohen, James Slater, huge songwriters. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, out here in Little Granville. You know, so I was very excited about it. So interested in the songwriters. And so I met John and Natasha. And I don't know why they thought I was in the music business. I hadn't really started it yet. But they're visionaries too, right?
And well, they did a great job with that place down there.
And so I think they just took a chance on me. And they said, well, hey, if you want to maybe book some shows here, why don't you try it? And I did the head bob. You know, like when you're like, I have no idea how to do this, never done it, but yes, I will try it. And so I did that. And that really was the first time that I started like scouting. And I would look up like who's playing in Cookeville. And I knew that I knew music. I've always felt pretty confident in that. And so I started bringing music there. And then I started Leaning Tree. I just started learning about the music business. I mean, I got on Google and YouTube and I learned about licensing and publishing and labels and all the different types of deals and
so
like
many parts of it.
Yes, how it all works and who gets what and just the legalities of it, and just became so fascinated with it because I wanted to do something with music, but I did not want to perform. And honestly, to this day, it'd be cool to get like a song or two out there that I is really special to me, but that's not my goal. I write for me. And so I started Leaning Tree. And the way that came about, I was one morning, I was sitting out kind of at the tip of my yard. We lived like on a ridge and we had this beautiful view of Center Hill Lake. And I was drinking my morning coffee. The fog was rising up above the lake. And I looked up and I saw this Leaning Tree. And it just hit me like that tree caught my attention out of all the other trees. Like all the other trees are growing normal, which is fine. But in the entertainment industry, you're probably going to be a little bit different and like very unique. And that is what helps you, you know, stand out. There's always like a breakout artist that's got a new sound or something different. Or a really interesting story, you know, life story. And so I just knew right away, I was like, oh, that's the name of my agency. And, you know, so just like any entrepreneur, I was like, what do I need to do to make this like legit and legal and all that stuff? And I just started. Again, I'm a people person and curious. And so I started meeting people. I think with you, I was like, can we go to lunch? You know, I just wanted to meet people and learn kind of how it all worked. So that's how Leaning Tree came about.
So tell us about Leaning Tree. So it's doing some really neat things with some tough to talk about topics.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So like I said, originally I was booking shows. I managed some artists. I did a little bit of artist development, but there was something not satisfying about that. I just was like, this is not what I want to do long term. I got a little burnt out in the music industry. I started to feel like there's all these artists moving to Nashville. They just all want to be the next big thing. I didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Right.
Thank goodness I stuck with it. I started to meet artists who like really had something to say. They were trying to, you know, solve some problem in their life, or they were just really passionate about something and you could feel it in their music. And so I thought, I've got to do something along those lines. And being a visionary, I can't really say like this is when I had the vision, but I started to have this idea for a show. And I would say the Bluebird Cafe show influenced this because I started to realize with that show, I really like putting people together, getting the right people together. And I love the conversation aspect of that story, you know, telling what's the story behind the song environment. But I never felt like we could talk enough at the Bluebird, like it's for music. And so I had this idea to do a show where it's really more of a talk show, but it's heavily supported by music. The format for one of the shows we'll talk about here in a minute is like, I have artists on the show. They introduce themselves. They talk about their passions. They play some of their music, which is like directly correlating with the topic of the show.
Right.
And then that like gets us ready. It gets us ready for a very hard to talk about conversation with other guests, the talk show guests. And so then we dive into a conversation, just like a talk show, and talk about addiction, you know, whatever it is. Right now, that's what we're talking about.
Which is a huge problem in our country right
now. It is. Yep. And then we wrap up the show with more music. Someone told me not too long ago, they said, it's kind of like church. I said, oh yeah, it is kind of like church. You have the worship, the sermon, and you wrap it up with a song. And I think that that format is so good for us. Like, music has this amazing ability to bring us all onto common ground. It helps us kind of lower our walls. It helps us get in touch with something within ourselves, but in the same room as a bunch of other people, right? Like, we're all having that experience together. Right. And so then we're able to dive into the talk.
I watched one of your videos, and you've been very successful with it. Is it hard? I mean, you've talked about mental health crisis, addiction, all these things. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to get those folks
to talk about it?
Talk about it?
You know, yes and no. I did learn through the Bluebird Show, and I think it's the same in sports. The work happens way before the show.
Yeah.
You know, the show is the best part, but you do all the work beforehand.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think I'm pretty decent at finding people who are ready to talk or who are ready to share their music or whatever it is. I interviewed all of the guests beforehand. I sent them show notes beforehand for approval. I said, like, I'm not putting anything online. We're not talking about anything you don't want to talk about. So I made sure to build that trust with them and make sure they knew, like, this is your story and you can tell however much of it you want to. I'm not going to go down any roads you don't want me to go down. And so that was very successful. And in fact, once they got on the stage, we started having that conversation. They said things that I was like, whoa, I can't believe they just shared that. But
they brought it out in them. I think
they saw women.
They felt comfortable.
Yes. At the most recent show I did, Woman, I mean, there were women weeping in the audience and cheering. I think they felt so inspired and so encouraged. And that encouraged the people that were on the stage sharing their story. They were like, wow, this is really having an impact on these women.
Has that been the toughest topic you talked about, or has there been one that
you know? Yes. In addiction, it heavily correlates generally with severe childhood trauma, like severe sexual abuse, especially. And actually, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, so this is the perfect time.
On that,
yes, yes.
Which is a terrible thing.
Oh, it is. It is such a big problem. So yeah, like, that's hard to talk about stuff, but I believe that we are all made by our Creator for a purpose.
Amen.
And I've always felt like, almost to the point where it felt like a burden, like, I'm okay talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do with it. And this, for me personally, I'm like, this is my purpose. I'm supposed to help other people feel courageous and be willing to talk about their story. So yeah, it's hard, but I mean, it's super rewarding.
It is. It is. And those folks need that. We're talking with Jill Stalnaker. We've been talking about the Leaning Tree agency that she created, where she's mixing music and difficult topics to talk about, like child abuse and addiction and mental health issues. We're going to talk more about that. She's now part of another group called Tennessee Voices. We're going to get into that in the next segment. We got to take a break. Stay with us. I'm your host, County Mayor Randy Porter. Hope you're having a great week, and thanks for joining us this week. My guest this week is Jill Stalnaker. She is a musician, a songwriter, but she's also created what's called the Leaning Tree Agency, and she's about to do a new podcast, and they do shows where she mixes music with hard-to-talk-about topics, and we're talking with Jill today. So you got a new podcast coming out.
Yes.
And it's kind of the podcast and what you do with the Leaning Tree Agency, it's called The Woman, right? Is that what it is?
Yes. So that's kind of my focus right now. I've got some other aspirations. I'm getting into the production space. I've got a documentary that I'm hoping to do pretty soon. And but yeah, again, I fell in love with live shows. And so the show that I recently did is called Woman. You know, I'm
just a plain woman.
Woman. Isn't that so bold?
Oh, yeah.
I just love it. It's so simple. So I recently did a show, as we talked about. I explained the format, and I'm taking it to other cities. So yes, I was in Nashville today looking at venues. I've kind of started laying groundwork for another show in Chattanooga, and I'd like to just keep expanding, you know, that circle. And so we're going to do a podcast too, because a a live show is just not long enough to talk right. about, you know, all of these things. And so I want to have lots of women on the podcast. It's going to be called The Woman Podcast. I'll do it right here.
Oh, great.
And yeah, I'm really excited about that. Right now, the focus is women in recovery. They're just like the strongest women I've ever met.
Absolutely.
And so I'm like that. And that's just kind of what I'm doing overall with my life. I'm very much in the mental health and addiction space. And so those are the women for now that are going to be on the podcast. It may grow into, you know,
who knows?
Women CEOs, like who knows, but yeah. but that's the focus right now.
You know, if you've never dealt with addiction or never had family or friends that dealt with it, you really don't know the struggles that those folks have gone with. We've got some friends of ours that their grandson, I mean, terrible addiction and all the many years and everything. But to get to that recovery point,
yep,
huge.
It's huge.
Takes a strong person to get there, right?
It does. It takes so much strength, and it is a disease. You know, it's genetic,
oh, yeah.
it's generational. It's so much, and it is, I mean, they have a harder road than most people. And so, yes, when they're in recovery, I'm just the stories, the things that these, for my purposes, women have overcome is amazing.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing.
They are, and you're also... mental health falls into that
yes,
too, right?
For sure.
We see so many people in today's society that have those mental health issues, and sometimes they're self-medicating themselves yep. with drugs, yep. and then that causes the addiction, and it causes a whole different issue
yeah.
That you're dealing with. And I don't know what the answer is. There's
a lot of thoughts on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are facing those issues today.
Yeah, it is. There are lots of approaches to recovery. It's a very personal journey, and there's such a stigma. I think my part, I think, is bringing awareness to it, right?
Yeah.
Anytime you can have a conversation,
yeah.
that's a step. And bringing opportunity to people that are in recovery, because, you know, most of them have a felony on their record. Like, it's yeah. so hard for them to get a job and to get a car and to get their license back. And it's so hard. And so I want to help be a part of breaking the stigma and giving opportunity. And to let their voices be heard.
It needs to be easier, doesn't it? Once they get into that recovery and they're trying to get their life back, you're right. It's like all these hurdles
yeah.
that they keep running into and they yeah. can't jump over. And it needs to be easier. And the more we get it out into the public and the more we talk about it, I think the easier it's going to get in the future. At least I hope it is.
It is, yeah. And I've been doing a lot of research on the barriers to reentry. And it starts at the top. I mean, at a federal level, like I've been learning about yeah. mandatory sentencing and
yeah.
things like that, you know, minimum sentencing. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, it all started, I think, in the like late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, there's just a lot of work to be done.
There is.
Yeah.
3 or 4 minutes we got left. Talk about Tennessee Voices.
Yeah.
I had not heard of this organization. You're part of it now.
Yes.
Tell
yeah.
us about that and what they do.
So I started working for Tennessee Voices in August. My role is as a prevention trainer. So specifically, I work with parents, mostly in the county jails, in recovery centers, you know, anyone that's got like a DCS case going on. We do a 10-week like deep dive personal growing, you know, curriculum.
Right.
It's not just a practical how-to curriculum that we do. It is, we do learn a lot of practical tools and tips for parenting, but it's really about helping the parent heal and grow and, you know, be able to model good behavior for their children and a lot of things that they probably didn't get growing up.
Yeah.
So it's great. But Tennessee Voices, we focus on mental health. We have so many programs. I'm still learning about all the programs that we have, you know, to support anyone struggling with mental health. We support the whole family, the children, the grandparents, the parents, the caregivers. You know, we've got family support specialists and people that'll, you know, go to court with people and all of that. We're in all 95 counties. We just merged with another organization called Nurture the Next. It is a fantastic organization to work for. If you need help with mental health in any way, shape, or form, we've got something for you.
You hit on something where you're working with folks that are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
The big problem that I think we see is that once they get to the point that they're incarcerated, they get back out, and if they're not careful, they're right back with the same group of people, and it becomes just a revolving door thing. You're trying to help them get to a point where that when they get out, they're not going back to it.
Yes, I am very real with the people in my class, and they like it. They want that, you know. We kind of build trust over those first couple weeks, but like we really get into it, and they share a lot about themselves, and I challenge them. You know, I tell them, like, you've heard a million times, you can break the cycle, you can break the cycle. I'm like, really? This has got to start with you. You can break this cycle. And sometimes they get discouraged. I had one woman recently tell me, this feels unattainable. And so I kind of walked her through it. I was like, if one of your kids, even just one of them, doesn't follow the same path, you're breaking a cycle, you know?
Yes.
And it's great. They need that encouragement. They need someone to say, I see you. I see the difficulties that you have faced in your life. And I believe in you. I've had multiple times now that I've been working for them for a while. When someone gets released, I'll be like at a recovery center and I'm like, oh, hey, you were in my class, you know? And so then I'm able to support them on the outside and, you know, kind of check in on them and say, how are you doing? Did you get that job? You know, are you going to meetings? So
that's what they need too. They've got to have the hope that they can do this, but they need the support.
Yep.
And since I've been working with the opioid money that's been coming down from all those lawsuits and we've been working with different departments and agencies and nonprofits and stuff across the county, we've got a great group of folks out there that are trying to work with those people to make sure that they don't get back into the same rut of that addiction and mental health issues.
Yes. And I have got to give a shout out to Lieutenant Matt Stinnett. He has like transformed from what I've heard, because I mean, I've only ever been there since he's been there.
Yeah.
But my experience coming into the Putnam County Jail has been top notch. I feel like I get top tier people in my classes. I think he's really good at incentivizing, you know, the people there to want something better for themselves. It's just been a wonderful experience. So he's doing such a great job.
He does. He's a great guy, and he does. Thank you for what you're doing. I mean, you're making a difference, and that's what we need to do in life, isn't it? And I agree with you 100%. I think everybody has a calling.
Yeah.
There's a purpose for each one of us. We just got to figure out what that is.
Yeah.
It sounds like you really have figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Randy.
Hey, that's our show for this week. I'm County Mayor Randy Porter. May God continue to bless.